I'm Don Hodson, and I'm doing an oral history interview for the project called The Spirit of Survival, Voices from the Depression. The date is August 15th, 1985, and this morning I'm visiting with Mr. Chris Smith in his home on 116 East 23rd in Torrington, Wyoming. Chris, would you mind starting out by telling me when you were born?
Born in Ulysses, Nebraska, October the 18th, 1893.
Chris, were you raised in that community of Ulysses, Nebraska?
Yes, I was. I lived in Ulysses, Nebraska from 1893 until 1916. It's 43 miles northwest of Lincoln.
So that's pretty far in eastern Nebraska, then.
Yeah, eastern Nebraska.
Were you raised in town, Chris, or on a farm? Well,
I was on a farm, 2 miles out of town. My dad bought a school section, and he built a house on it with 11 rooms.
So you were raised as kind of a farm boy then in Ulysses.
Yeah.
Now, when did you leave Ulysses? You mentioned to me you left it, and where did you go, Chris?
I went to North Dakota to teach school in 1916.
Well, did you go to college first, or did you get a normal training degree, as many young people did?
No, I went through high school. And I had a peculiar thing happened. I never started school until I was almost 7 years old. I had eye trouble, and I only went to grade school at 5 years.
Well, then what happened?
I took the eighth grade examination. My sister was teaching, and she said, "Well, you know all this stuff, Pat." My nickname was Pat. And she said, "You just well take the eighth grade examination and go to high school." And there were two other boys in my grade there. I was in the sixth grade after 5 years of school. And so I took the eighth grade examinations and passed it with flying colors.
So then you went right on into high school.
Right into high school
after 5 years of grade school. And then, did you go on to college, Chris?
Yes, I went. My mother thought I was too young. See, I was only 15. I wasn't 16 yet when I started down to Cotner University in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I took a business course. And I was always kind of a whiz at mathematics. I worked all the problems in the arithmetic book when I was in the sixth grade.
Chris, I'm gonna adjust that mic there a little bit. Okay. How long did you go to? Now it was Cotner University.
Yeah.
Because I'd never heard of that.
Well, it's been defunct since 1932.
Okay. How long did you spend at Cotner, Chris?
I spent 5 years. I spent 1 year in the business college, then 4 years in college.
Then you went from there to South Dakota to teach school?
No. I had my back broke.
Oh my, how did you do that?
Tipped over in a car.
Oh my goodness.
I had been out singing German songs. I was taking German in college, and I'd been out singing German songs with a family out in the country, me and my two sisters. And as we came back, I had one of those old Model T Fords that when the wishbone got loose and you hit a rock, you might tip over.
Oh my. Well, I suppose then you were in the hospital for quite a while. And
we didn't have hospitals in those days.
Were you just at home, Chris?
Just at home. My folks lived in a hotel in Ulysses, Nebraska. I ran a hotel in Ulysses, Nebraska, and I had a lady come and live there with me and took care of me. Lived there in the hotel, and she was not with me all the time, but she just was there most of the time.
Once your back healed, then Chris, did you then go to South Dakota?
No, I went on. I don't have a very good recollection of just what I did then, but I was not in shape to do anything much. So my dad let me take charge of a garage he had there in town, and I ran a garage for a year.
But then, when you did go to South Dakota, in South Dakota?
No, North Dakota.
Oh, North Dakota, I'm sorry. And what was the name of the town?
Towner,
North Dakota.
That's where Townsend came from.
Okay. Now, when you mention Townsend, you're talking about
that. He was the fellow that was going to give everybody $250 a month. You remember that?
That's right. There, in fact, did he later go to California? It seemed to me.
I don't know where he went.
He had this plan of giving older people past 60,
yeah,
a couple $100 a month,
and they had to spend it.
Exactly, and then as long as they spent it, then they could get another $200 a month from the government, couldn't they, Chris?
I don't think they'd get any more, but they got up $200 a month, $250 a month it was.
Well, Chris, there were towns and clubs all over the country.
Yeah.
And he was from
North Dakota.
And that was why the town was called Towner, North Dakota?
No, Townsend. His name was Townsend. Yeah. And I spent the year there. But I had had a motorcycle accident, and I didn't walk very well. Mm-hmm. I had my foot broken, and it still bothers me.
Chris, going back to Townsend, you mentioned the Townsend Club.
Yeah.
Torrington had a Townsend Club, I believe, in the 1930s during the Depression.
Well, there was a big Townsend outfit up at Iowa Center while I was teaching school.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Now, did you
Arnold Skye was, I mean, no, that's the boy's name. It wasn't Louis Skye, if I remember that right, it was his name. He was the one that had charge of the Townsend Club up in that country.
Did you go to those meetings of the Townsend Club, Chris?
No, I never did. Uh-huh. I never happened to go to those meetings, but I heard a lot about them.
What did people think about the Townsend Club, Chris?
Well, they thought that was an awful lot of money in those days.
Were those clubs rather popular, though?
Yeah, they're popular out in the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have any other clubs aside from the Townsend clubs that people?
No, that's the only one I remember about up there anyway.
Well, how long were you in North Dakota?
I taught 1 year in North Dakota. Then I came home here, and I registered for the draft, mm-hmm. and my dad had bought an old Ford car, and he put a rear end on it to make a truck out of it, chain drive truck. And my brother and I registered on Tuesday, and on Friday we started to Wyoming. And it took us about 2 days and a half to get out here, that old truck.
Mm. What did you come to Wyoming for, Chris?
Well, he had bought two farms out here at Hawk Springs, and he built a house the year before in 1916, and in 17, when I came back from North Dakota, we came out here, and you're going to use this truck to haul the lumber out for the house. I don't know how I got the lumber hauled out for the barn. I have it mixed up. Yeah, he built the house, and we came out to build the barn. He built a great big barn, 52 feet wide and 50 feet long.
Well, that was an early irrigation project out there, huh?
Yeah, a fella came down to Ulysses, a real estate salesman came down there and lived at the hotel for a couple of weeks and talked my dad into coming out here. And I drove him out here in a Hupmobile car.
I've heard of Hupmobile. Now, what were they?
Well, they were a little low car. Hupmobiles. My dad bought three of them, and he traded three Hupmobile cars and an old Nash car and I think a Buick car in on this land.
And so your dad got some land out here?
Yeah, and I came out here in 1914.
And you'd also...
We came out here in 14. That's when I was running a garage. This fella came down and sold Dad this land. Then he didn't come out here until 16 and built the house. And then we came out here in 17 and I hauled the lumber out and we built the barn.
Where'd you haul the lumber from?
Torrington.
Torrington couldn't have been very large at that time.
They had three lumber yards.
The lumber yard was a good business.
Everybody was building houses in that time.
Chris, you said you registered for the draft, and that was about the time of World War One.
Yeah, 17.
Did you serve in the war then?
Yes, I was. I went to the Army in October of 1917 and got home for Christmas.
Well, you did. Well, now, did you go overseas?
No, we were all ready to go overseas when the armistice was signed. See, that was signed on November the 5th, wasn't it?
It was in November, and you're probably right on that date, and
1917.
And then you came back home.
I got home for Christmas.
When you speak of home, was that here?
At Hawk Springs.
At Hawk, where your folks were?
They never moved out here. Well, they did move out here, but they had to prove that you had to live on that land a certain length of time that they bought.
Once you came back here to Hawk Springs, did you start farming, Chris, or did you start in teaching?
No, I farmed. Well, I got married pretty soon. In 19, I met Madge at a 4th of July celebration, and an old fellow, these Madden boys' grandfather here introduced me to her at this dance. We had a dance. She came to the dance.
Well, now you're talking about Madge, what was her name?
Yoder.
Madge Yoder, whose parents had a ranch.
Out there.
The Big Willows, they called it.
Yeah.
Well, now, you married her. Then, when did you go to Iowa Center to start teaching?
Well, I didn't teach right away. She was teaching when I married her. She had taught at the Harris School and also at the Frontier School. That's where the hackers out here went to school. You heard of the hackers. And she taught the Frontier School after she was married.
Mm-hmm. But you later went to Iowa Center to teach, right?
Yep. In 1919, we went to Iowa Center.
Now, were Were you also superintendent of the Iowa Center School?
Well, I was. You didn't call me superintendent. Oh. I just taught high school. I had no authority over the teachers. I just was the high school teacher.
Chris, what was that like teaching school in those days?
Oh, it was a kind of, we had an outdoor basketball court, and there weren't very many boys in high school. About 6 boys all there were in high school. Had more girls than had boys. And the first year we were up there, there were just 3 teachers. Mrs. Esling and Madge and me. Madge taught the first 3 grades. Mrs. Esling taught the 6th, maybe the first 4 grades. And Mrs. Esling taught up to the 8th grade, and then I taught the high school, 2 years of high school.
Were the kids pretty tough to deal with?
No.
Boys,
they were quite tame boys. Mm-hmm. You know Ed Cotton here?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Well, his mother used to teach there, and when I got to school out there, she didn't get the job anymore, and she didn't have any good words for me. And I remember one time, he had a baseball. He threw it at me. He was showing his love for his mother, and it hit me in the neck here. And that's the only time I ever spanked a kid.
Well, I suppose you did everything out there. You were the coach and the teacher and
yeah,
disciplinary and everything, weren't you?
And I hauled the school kids to school in the school bus.
Oh, you?
I had the first school bus. Vance Swift and I had the first school bus in Goshen County, first motorized school bus. Hmm. And there's an old fellow by the name of Horton that hauled kids from Bear Creek up there to that school. Mm-hmm. He hauled his kids and another family from down there on Bear Creek. I can't remember their names anymore.
Did you teach very long at Iowa Center?
I taught 2 years. It was 2 or 3.
Well then, did you go from that position right to become county superintendent?
No, I taught 2 years at Hawk Springs.
Okay.
2 years at Hawk Springs.
Is that much different than teaching at Iowa Center?
No, it was kind of at home. I lived at home there. I had this big house, 6-room house, 6 rooms in the basement, and then there was upstairs we had a all one room, and we had dances there. And we'd take the piano, put the piano upstairs every time we had a dance.
Well, teaching must have been kind of a lot of fun in those days then.
Well, it was different.
Because Chris, I've had a lot of women teachers tell me that when they were teaching, they had to pretty much watch their steps. They had to be careful about who they were around and so forth. Did the men have to worry so much about that in teaching?
I never did.
Yeah. Also, I understood a lot of the women teachers, they wouldn't permit them to teach if they were married.
That's right. In Torrington here, they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. In Torrington, if they're married, they couldn't teach. And they had to stay certain place.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, after you taught at Hawk Springs, what did you do then, Chris?
Well, I taught at Hawk Springs, and I came in town here one day, and I talked to Mr. Lawhead, and he said, "Why don't you run for county superintendent?" And I didn't think I wanted to do that. I said, well, they've got a good college superintendent. And I drove out 2 miles in the country before, and I decided I'd come back and file.
What made you change your mind?
Right? I just had an idea that maybe I could do that.
And you won the election.
And I won the election by 2 votes.
Is that right? Who did you beat?
Mrs. Hurst. Mrs. Carolyn Hurst.
Oh. And by 2 votes, you became county superintendent.
By 2 votes, I became county superintendent.
Well, what did you do as county superintendent, Chris?
Well, the biggest thing I did was go out and visit the schools, of course. I had 78 schools to visit.
78 schools in this county alone?
That's right. At the first year, they began to be less schools every year. But the big thing was in the spring when I had to give the 8th grade examination. I had to correct all those papers.
For all the 8th graders in the county?
They had sent out from the state superintendent's office, they sent out, and I distributed around to the schools, took the examinations to the different schools. They were printed, you know. And then they mail them in to me, and I had to correct all of them.
Now, if a boy or girl didn't pass that exam, were they held back in 8th grade then? At that time?
Yeah.
They had to pass the exam or go
into high school.
Chris, when you went out to visit in those schools, what did you usually do? Did you go see the teachers?
I didn't do what the people, what the board always had them do, ciphering. I never had them cipher. I weighed them and checked their eyes and their hearing every time I went out there. I had a scale and weighed them, and I could put in your guess what all of them weighed the time I got through that.
You did that?
Yeah. And I always tried not to scare the teachers. They were always worried when the county superintendent came, I think, and they were afraid they were going to have to have a class or something.
Well, did you, as county superintendent, hire and fire teachers?
No. Of course, I helped get them jobs, as far as that goes. I see a woman over here at the wing that lives in the wing over here, the old folks' home, nursing home, that came here from Minneapolis, and she came here and she didn't have any way to get out to there, so I had to take her out there. When I came back one time, I bit up a lot, and when I was coming home, I ran off the road up between here and Lingo. Just ran it out into ditch, and I just drove back up on the road again, went to sleep.
Well, you must have done a lot of traveling then to visit all of those schools and see all of the students.
Yeah, quite. I got paid 10 cents a mile for it.
What was your salary as county superintendent?
$150 a month.
Did that ever change?
Well, not while I was in office.
It stayed the same.
And I never did have. Oh, I couldn't have over $600 travel expense either.
Up to that.
Up to $600. That was the limit.
As county superintendent, did you also have an office in the courthouse, Chris?
Yes, I had the office up there right next to where the clerk of the court, clerk of the district court, right next to that. Up there, you know the old building, don't you? And it was across the hall from the courtroom.
I know that room well.
Chris, did you enjoy being county superintendent?
Yes. Well, it was a job, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, you served in that for what? In during the 1930s, wasn't it? In during the
from 26 to the end of 34. 26 to 34, actually. Yeah.
Well, the Depression hit in the 1930s, Chris. And could you tell us? Could you tell that a Depression had hit the country?
Yeah, it was just... everybody was going broke.
And that was very obvious around you.
Yes, very obvious, yes. The people just... The government came in here and bought the cattle for little or nothing. They couldn't sell them. No sale for cattle to speak of. And you could buy, I remember, buy cattle for just practically nothing.
Well, what about in the schools? Did the schools start losing students? Were people moving out? Or did the enrollment stay about the same?
Oh, they came to school just the same, but they had trouble getting food. Everybody did.
What did they do? Were there any ways in which they could get food? Did the county help them get food or anything?
Yeah, they had food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was during the war. That was a little later than they had the food stamps.
But those were really some severe hard times then, weren't they, Chris, in the 30s for people?
Yes, a lot of them left their homesteads in those times. You know, just all that made the paintings up here on the wall.
Yes, Ernest Stevens.
Stevens, yeah.
Do you know him, Chris?
I really never knew him, but I knew his wife.
Maude.
I met them after, I didn't see when he was up there painting, but she used to live here in town. I have her sewing machine in here.
Do you really?
Yeah. I'd use mine to fix harness and everything else, and she had a good sewing machine, and she wanted to sell it. She sold it for $10.
Chris, what happened to you during the Depression? How did it affect you, the Depression?
Well, look, I had what I thought was a pretty good job. $150 a month was a pretty good job in those days. That's more than I'd ever gotten teaching school. I taught out there at Iowa Center. I don't think I ever did get over $150 a month.
Well, Chris, did we have some, during those years, did it get awfully dry, and did we have some pretty bad dust storms?
Oh, yes. I remember the dust would blow, and the thistles would pile up along the fence, and the dust would just always be a raised place where the it caught the dust, the thistles in the dust, and they just along the fence is always a lot higher than the rest of the ground around there. I don't suppose you ever heard of it, but they used to burn thistles in steam engines here when they plowed when they broke the land out.
I had no idea. No,
that was Julius Sykes had an old, and he burned thistles in his engine.
Sykes was kind of a local inventor, wasn't he?
He was really good. They all got their ideas for meat loaders and stuff like that from him.
Did he run a machine shop, Chris?
Yes, he had a machine shop here, out here west of town.
Mm-hmm.
It was west of town then. It's not west of town now.
through the years here in Torrington and leave? Or?
Well, he had a homestead out here. I don't know whether it was on the irrigated or whether it was on the dry, but south of Lingle and south and east of Lingle. And they lived out there.
Did he have his own shop that he built new machinery that he experimented with? That it? I've heard the name.
Yes, he did. And his sons were good mechanics too. Yes. One of them lives out here yet.
There are some sites around this. Chris, 1934, you left then the county superintendent's office. I presume, what, did you lose an election in 1934? Was that it?
Yeah.
Did you run as Republican or Democrat in those years?
No,
or nonpartisan?
Nonpartisan. Right. Nonpartisan.
How did you campaign for that job?
Well, one time I wrecked my car. I got to think now how I happened to wreck it.
Did that help you get publicity or something? Or
no, I don't know. But I borrowed an old Ford car from my renters. Some relation of my renter and borrowed it and campaigned in it in an old second-hand Ford car.
Then you got beat in 1934. What did you do then, Chris?
Well, I was already living in town here, and I bought a greenhouse from the Jones, from John Jones's, not his father, but his grandfather, I guess it was. I bought it of, actually, Lyle Poole had the, really owned the greenhouse. He'd been running a greenhouse here, and he'd gone away, and he hadn't made much money at it, I don't think, and I bought that greenhouse and moved it from Lyle Poole's place down to where Swinson's has the, just north. It's where Cabello's auto is now. That's where I had my greenhouse.
Because that remained a greenhouse for many, many years, didn't it?
Yeah.
Chris.
And I sold that to a fella and he moved it up to Lusk.
Oh, really? Now, when you were running the greenhouse, that was still some pretty tough times in 1935,
yes, it really was.
36, 37.
Yeah.
Was it pretty tough to make a living then?
Yeah, I didn't get along too good.
Did your wife work then in those years, Chris?
No, and we started a flower shop in our house up here. Then I, after we ran that there a while, the fellow from Scott's Bluff, Molly Hayes ran it for him down here, and then Louis bought it of him. Louis Collier bought the flower shop of McDonald in Scott's Bluff, and then we bought it of Louis. We bought the flower shop from Louis and started in. And we had it down there in the telegram place.
You've had quite a varied career, Chris. You were a farmer, you were a school teacher, you were a county superintendent, you were also a greenhouse and flower shop worker. So you've had quite a long, varied career.
I've done a lot of things. I put in a sprinkler system.
Sure. So you've done a little everything. Do you recall much really about the Depression of the 30s, Chris? What stands out in your mind in those years of the Depression?
Well, I think it was a lot worse in the cities than it was in the country. The people in the country raised their own gardens, and that they made it and just lived off the, what they raised, pretty much.
Do you think people were going hungry around here, though?
No, I don't think anybody went hungry around here. They moved in with their folks, generally. This is what happened, a lot of them.
Chris, I've heard that there was a poorhouse located down by the fairgrounds, some small houses. Do you recall anything about that? I've heard people talk about some buildings down by the fairground, and they referred to those as the poorhouse. Did you recall any of that?
I don't remember about that at all.
What about, did you remember any of the WPA projects?
Oh, yes, the WPA project all the time. I never had anything to do with them but I remember that everybody was getting on WPA. They made this park up here in Guernsey. And that most people from here worked up there. A lot of them did, anyway.
Did you have to change the way in which you lived during those years, Chris? Did you try to save more on your groceries, or anything that you and Madge did
I remember that I had a big garden and had thousands of gladiolas, and I sold gladiolas to whoever wanted to buy them.
So gladiolas helped to get you through the depression, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Chris, this has been an interesting conversation with you. I want to extend my appreciation for you taking the time to visit with me about your recollections of that time. Chris, is there anything that I failed to cover that maybe should be mentioned about the depression?
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, I want to thank you for letting me talk to you, Chris.
I don't think I've done very much good for you.
I enjoyed the conversation.